Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Today's Zero Block 30 is presented by our good friends at ArborTech. ArborTech is an incredible brand. When I first started doing longtime toolies with Kyle, we wanted to wait to get it like a sponsorship. Like, that's the way things go here. Like, if you do stuff for a long enough time, you're going to have somebody that comes and knocking. We didn't want to have a shitty tool company to be the first one. ArborTech is exactly what we're looking for. It's a high quality product that is carving. It's doing anything art related with wood that you could possibly imagine. You got to go on their website at arbortechtools.com. Check them out because the things that people have accomplished with these tools are unreal. We were talking with some of the people that work there and they didn't have really any experience with tools. Kind of like me 6 months ago. I didn't have any experience at all. And the things that they're creating for their families, like making bowls, making spoons, making seats, making stools, making all kinds of stuff, anything that you could possibly dream of, all of them are with these products. Some of these products, you never have to sharpen them. They have self-sharpening capabilities. Some of them are just absolutely industry leaders, like in what they design. It attaches to a grinder and you can put a little planer device on it and you can make wood completely flat that's otherwise coarse and not flat. The things that you can accomplish with these tools, I can't really even explain. It's unbelievable. Go to arbortechtools.com/zero. Use the promo code zero for an additional 10% off while sales prices are going on. That's arbortechtools.com/zero and use the promo code zero for 10% off. It's incredible. arbortechtools.com. I can't stress it enough. They are incredible. That's the reason why we partnered with them. We wouldn't partner with anybody who is shit. They're not shit. They're incredible. Go check out their shit at arbortechtools.com/zero. We have five rounds in the magazine as well. Big time day. I'm excited because this is the first ever military news around the globe. That's right. None of the topics are going to be about America, which is different for our show, which we usually focus on old America. Round number one, Azerbaijan is where we're going to start out. You probably didn't expect that. And we're going to start there because they began trending on Twitter on account of being very, very odd. But I love it, and they have a passion, a fire, and a pizzazz for the good old propaganda music. They are changing the scene in propaganda. This is like propaganda from World War II era, from the Cold War era. This is good old-fashioned propaganda. It's none of that newfangled, let's just make some memes bullshit. It's the good stuff. Round number two, although our political climate currently seems like a sitcom that no one would willingly watch, except for maybe those weirdo Walking Dead fans, the Mexican defense news story of the week would make an amazing movie. We're going to tell you about that. Round number three, our friends in Canada freaked out people by using loudspeakers with wolf sounds for a psychological deterrent during a training session. Would that work? And we're going to talk about what would be even better than that. And round number four, Russia claims this one's great. Russia claims that the United Kingdom's COVID vaccine will, wait for it, it's going to turn you into a monkey. We're going to take a look at that science because it doesn't seem correct. We aren't saying it isn't correct. We just want to take a look. Plus, if it does turn you into a monkey, sign me up. I love monkey goofing. And finally, round number five. This one does have to do with America. I sat down with Team Rubicon's Jake Wood. He's the CEO over there, Marine. He's an all-around awesome guy and unbelievably handsome. I didn't know that he played football at Wisconsin before joining the Marines. We talked about that a little bit. Doing 4 years, being an athlete, being on the all Big Ten academic team twice, and then enlisting. The fuck was Jake thinking? I asked him that question. You're going to hear the answer later. Well, let's get started with the show. But we're going to start off in Azerbaijan. Is that how you say it?
Azerbaijan.
We've said it already.
Azerbaijan. Like a million.
Azerbaijan.
Well, I'll never remember that. Like, I'm terrible with names. That's the reason why when I started reading Harry Potter, I had to switch to the audiobook. I'm not going to remember who Voldemort is. Like, I would have said Voldemort my entire time with a strong T. If it's a name that's outside of, like, George or Carl or Bill, I'm not going to remember it.
Oh, even I was reading Hermione.
It's difficult.
I was reading Hermione, Hermione, in my head, the first book. So I get it.
Isn't that shit embarrassing whenever you've only read something your entire life and then you find out the way that it's like actually pronounced? I think Chimenea? What is that word?
Chimenea?
Chimenea? Yeah, like I always get that one wrong too. But anyways, let's head on out and see what's going on there. Kate, give us a little bit of the backstory.
Yeah, and so for a quick thing of where this is, Azerbaijan is on the Caspian Sea. It is sits right on top of Iran. And then Armenia is a little bit to the west of it. So that's the area of the world that we're talking about here. And they're putting the guns in Guns N' Roses, my friends. The Azerbaijan military has released a bizarre heavy metal music video touting their war weapons and featuring a whole lot of explosions amid a violent dispute with its neighbor Armenia. The guitar-shredding propaganda tune named Fire was performed by a group of local heavy metal rockers dressed in combat uniforms, according to the country's military YouTube channel. So this was an official military-sanctioned heavy metal blowing dicks off music video.
And I want to say, because I've had people who have relatives or they have ancestry on both sides of this argument. We're not picking sides here. I have no idea what's happening, and I will not research it in any way, shape, or form. We're just here to comment on the fact that they are goofing in their video.
Yeah, this is a wacky version of propaganda that is kind of ridiculous. And we'll play the song in a second. The brain-rattling song is performed in an open field with no enemies in sight next to a fleet of missiles, launchers, and tanks. And so this is almost like the music video of a North Korea parade, I guess, where they're showing, this is their way of showing off all their knickknacks.
It's like a North Korean like field
right,
op
yeah.
is
so,
essentially what's going on.
It's performed by local missions Kehun Zainalov and Narin Karmazyova, backed by the Nur Group, which we all know.
Unbelievable.
I'm sure we've all been listening
pronunciation,
to them.
Kate.
Yeah, that's big time. I've probably seen them several times here in New York City. But
I can't wait for concerts to start up again because I'm dying to see these guys.
We got
to
see these guys. Yeah, I used to be a roadie for them, totally.
Oh, yeah.
But while the metal rockers look like they're ready for some Megadeth in real life, Azerbaijan's military is not as powerful as the band's sound and has been locked in a violent conflict with land over in neighboring Armenia for years. Well, that might change once Armenia gets a load of this fucking tune right here.
Doing this propaganda video is that they know not everybody's a hard rock guy. Like, I'm not a hard rock guy by any means. Even though if it's 80s hair band and you have shades of White Snake, you have shades of Guns N' Roses, a little bit of, what's that one that sings, "We're not gonna take it, Sister Hazel"?
Sister Hazel? No.
Twisted Sister.
Yeah, I knew there's some kind of sibling thing going on there.
Very
but even
close.
If you're not, or Sister Hazel, what does Sister Hazel say?
That's a song. No, that's a song.
They sing,
no,
that's
a band. They were a one-hit wonder band from the 90s. Wait. They were.
Yeah,
they were like one.
Times I'm
one
so
song.
Confused. All my words, they bleed into you.
That's Sister Hazel. Oh, yeah.
Wow. Okay, you're right.
Sister Hazel is like,
all for
that's
you.
Like the RC Cola of blues travel, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Perfect.
My bad.
Okay. So even if you're not a hard rock person at all, they've got a little soulful R&B. Let's give it a little bit of an Usher twist. Now, you're telling me that fella standing there in his fancy boy uniform with his hair a-flowing, his lettuce looking like romaine, you're telling me that he, when he starts crooning that way, you're not willing to give him a little combat jump? Please.
Yeah. Raise the white flag and drop the panties.
Yeah. Exactly right. Now, you're exactly right.
I have a question for you guys. Say we're ramping up some new war and we want to do
this. No, we don't have time for that. We still got a couple going on.
We got a couple going on, but say we get bored and we're like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's start a new one.
We need to freshen this thing up.
Right. Let's freshen it up. Let's bring in. Would you be mad?
You know what it is? Like, we need a new war. Like, you're already relaxing in the bathtub, but you've been in there for 30 minutes. You got to put the water on scalding hot again just to freshen up the tub.
So we want to freshen up the tub. They're wearing the military uniforms, but these are rockers who are not in the military. Which band would you pick to do our propaganda video? Who would you let wear?
For me, this is an absolute no-brainer. Limp
Sister
Bizkit.
Hazel.
They're coming out. No, Limp Bizkit. Yeah.
And the Limp
Bizkit. I was going to say this, based on their video, it has a very much of a Creed vibe for me.
Oh. Well, I think you bring out Limp Bizkit's a little something for everybody. You have a little rap. You have a little hardness. Everybody loves a little good Limp Bizkit.
You're right. It's got a little something for everyone. I think, okay, we'll go with Limp Bizkit.
And what if they're like,
then.
We don't know. This foe that we're going up against is very dangerous. And then Fred Durst comes out with his red Yankees hat on. He's like, you got to have faith in your generals.
Yeah.
You know who I think might not be very apparent of a choice, but I think would still be a good choice? Miley Cyrus.
Oh, Party in the USA, yeah.
Yeah, and she can fucking rock too.
Exactly.
She can. And I know that Dolly Parton is her godmother. They kind of look alike too.
A little.
Like if you look at early Dolly and what she looked like as a teenager, there's some pretty big similarities.
So we bring out Dolly and Miley and maybe Limp Bizkit all together for some.
Oh, I don't know if you want to bring Dolly out with a bunch of horned up troops.
Rock and roll. But yeah, so that would be ours. But anyway, yeah, that's... I wonder if they realize that people, because it's all, this video is, we're talking about it because it's all over Twitter right now. People are sharing it and kind of poking fun at it and being like, oh my God, this is the lamest thing ever, but they're really trying. I wonder if they
imagine
realize.
Coming on, if you're that guy and you're logging online and the next thing you know, you go like to translate tweet and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I was killing it. I was totally slaying the guitar. What do you mean this sucks? What do you mean? It's got, but you also got to be happy that it got 12 million views. Got to be happy about
that. That's true. That is true. A lot of people Googling Azerbaijan right now, wondering what the hell's going on with that. So you're right.
Really putting them on the map, so to speak.
Did accomplish something there. But yeah, I don't know if that's what they were going for. But interested to see how that pans out. Things are heating up. Both sides, Armenia and Azerbaijan, have been breaking ceasefires and rocketing each other and all sorts of crazy shit over a contested.
And honest to God, that is what we should have. Like, instead of wars, it's just like, let's do an old-fashioned band fest where you're just going to battle of the bands. We don't need rockets. We don't need drones. We don't need tanks. We don't need any of that. Give us your best rockers. And just have them go at it.
Mm-hmm.
Have them go at it. And then you get the United Nations Security Council together. They vote like they're essentially the Simon Cowell and Paula Abdul and Randy Jackson of like world peace.
Miley Cyrus versus the Taliban.
Oh. Speaking of the Taliban, they were upset this week too. They were very pissed off that people would be like, how dare you say that we broke our peace accord by doing just a simple 10-day bombing, strifing mission against the people of our country. Why would you say that we broke the peace accord just for that? Just for that. Fuck you, Taliban.
Yeah, they should have done a little music video with it.
Could have gone a lot further.
Yep. We're going to go a lot further south than I am right now. We're going to go down to Mexico City for round number two. Because this guy, this one is an unbelievable story. Last week, we told you about the Brazilian senator who had all kinds of money shoved inside his butt cheeks. Kate wanted to make sure that we also mentioned that it was in his butt flaps as well. So it could have been even more money.
Under the butt.
Because as you get older.
Right.
Yeah,
when you get older, your butt crack extends by like 15 inches.
Right. Yeah. So when you have that kind of story, there's really no, like, follow-up. That's the story. Like, you can't bury that lead. When the money's in your asshole, that's the story. You don't care what's going on. This one's a little bit different. You could make an entire series about what's going on here, and I'm sure that they're going to. Like, Netflix is taking this right now, and they are casting Benicio del Toro to play this general that's in charge, and he's going to kill that role. But this story, it's like, yeah, it makes sense when you hear it. Kate, walk us through it.
All right. Coming to us from Mexico City, he was the stern-faced chief of Mexico's armed forces, leading the battle against the nation's powerful drug cartels. In 2016, he denounced...
And also, before you continue, sorry, Kate, when she's saying he, just picture Benicio del Toro as this general, because I'm sure you don't know what he actually looks like. Benicio del Toro in like an olive drab jumpsuit. Here you go.
Hot, hot, hot. In 2016, he denounced the traffickers who ambushed a military convoy, killing six soldiers as sick, insane beasts. Former General Salvador Cienfuegos, who served as Mexico's defense minister from 2012 to 2018 under ex-president Enrique Peña Nieto, was arrested late Thursday in Los Angeles. Cienfuegos faced 5 charges related to narcotics trafficking and would be transferred to New York. In exchange for bribe payments, he permitted the H2 cartel, one that routinely engages in wholesale violence, including torture and murder, to operate with impunity in Mexico. Prosecutors say they have evidence of communication between the general and a senior leader of the H2 cartel. The news.
And the H2 cartel, like to give you a little background on that, they've been around for a long time and they are vicious. Like, this is the type of cartel that will go into a town, take the teachers, cut their heads off, put them on stakes and shit like that. When I was at Lackland, we would get safety briefs of like, if you wanted to go for a weekend, because people were going to Mexico for a weekend. There was a time in 2010, 11, when military was like, no one's going to Mexico right now. It's just absolutely out of control. When that happened and it was getting really, really wild, that's when this dude was promoted to be in charge of the army. That gives you like a little scope of what's going on there.
Yeah, and the news stunned Mexico, where for many it served as the latest confirmation of the insidious nexus between the long corrupt government and the criminal gangs that hold so much sway over the country. I feel like here talk about the revolving door between top military leaders, and then they get out and they go to government and they become contractors and make a ton of money and politicians. There, I feel like it's that with the cartels almost.
Yeah,
I was going to say the line that news stunned Mexico. Really? You were stunned that this was happening?
Well, I think it's because this guy was so outspoken. Like, this would be like Mattis joining the Taliban.
Yeah,
like,
right.
This is like you have like this guy that is just so against everything that's going on there, and he's outspoken, and then you're like, what?
Publicly. What? That's the greatest cover. He makes you think he's outspoken when, in fact, he's catching those bribes.
Yeah, I can see a movie coming out about this. But since being dispatched to the front lines of the anti-drug battle more than a decade ago, military personnel have been implicated in cases of torture, killings, disappearances, and other crimes. Yet, polls still show that the military remains among the country's most trusted institutions. If that goes to show you how bad things are, that, like, we'll still take them. It's better than what else we got going on. That is in part because of its humanitarian work. Mexican troops regularly respond to floods, hurricanes, earthquakes, and other natural disasters. In Mexico City, the arrest of the general became a conversation topic overnight, top one, number one on the charts. To many Mexicans, the case strikes the heart of Mexico's fight against drug trafficking and transnational criminal organizations that have managed to corrupt government up to the very highest level. In the end, it's proven that Cienfuegos is guilty. That means one of the people that was in charge of the Mexican war on drugs was corrupted by organized crime. Others have a let's wait and see attitude, saying he's got to go through the whole legal process. You know, you can't say he's definitely guilty yet, but odds are pretty good. Not great.
And they're also hoping that he's not like the guinea pig there, that he's not like the target of like the corrupt government on the inside. This story, man, like if this came out and it was about our country, like, and you had somebody like that that was financing terrorism abroad or some shit like that, it would shake you to your core. Because if you can't trust the military in your country, if that's one that you really, really can't trust, who can you? I mean, if the cops and the defense is bad, you got to throw away the entire thing.
Well, yeah, it's tough here, though, because, you know, when you consider the military, you can't involve the entire military, because I think if at some point you'd get somebody who would have a moral compass and would crack and want to talk about it. So I don't think it's the entire military, but it's still very tough to swallow that even some of the military.
But when it's the top guy. Top fella.
You're right. But also, too, when you're talking about drugs, obviously I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know. There's a lot of money involved in drugs. They must have been kicking back to him a substantial amount of money if he was willing to just basically put his whole life, career, and reputation on the line.
And you're right, Chaz. Part of me does wonder, like you said at the end, is he a guinea pig? Is he being framed by other corrupt members of government, or is he actually bad?
Let's put on our tinfoil hats. I love it.
But I feel like he's probably actually bad. I don't know. It has to be such a hopeless feeling.
Because why would I could see if the charges came from inside Mexico, that would be, to me, that would be a little bit more of that chance happens. But coming from America, like us charging it, like in our federal court system, we're not really concerned with like what's going on there, like on that level of stuff. They must have some serious, serious proof of what's going on.
Yeah.
And the fact that he presided over all these things, it was rapings, killings, like torture, all that shit. And all he would face is 10 years. Like that, you know what case that reminds me of? Like, why did they get so long? Charles Manson. This guy did essentially what Charles Manson did on a much larger scale.
Yeah, not direct. Indirect, pretty much.
I mean, I know what Charles Manson did, but I'm sorry.
Like the indirect murder, because Charles Manson never killed anybody himself.
Oh, right.
Like influenced others to do it or allowed them to do it, and like he was the influence there. Mm-hmm. So this guy obviously had the power and authority to stop a lot of stuff and didn't. Like, that's passive agreement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy. Final thought.
Coming to theaters 2022.
It has to be so disheartening to have been somebody in his squad, his, like, cartel squad, who was so genuine and was truly trying, and then to find out your boss is, like, like that.
And or a family member who was in the military and they were killed because they were fighting these wars that are really just proxy shit.
Yeah, it's crazy. So that has to
be
right.
That's why I don't think it's an open secret, because I do think those people exist who actually do care and would be bothered by it and would say something. So I think it is a very small number of people that you get involved in these sorts of things.
Mm. Yeah, no doubt. I need to relax after that. That's why I'm going to take advantage of my friends at 3Chi. That's 3Chi. It's the leader of hemp-derived cannabinoid. I'm struggling today. Products. All of the products are formulated by a biochemist, and all products are made right here in the USA. So you don't have to worry about cartel involvement whenever you're dealing with Delta 8, because it's federally legal THC. And its products are sold in the U.S. since Prohibition started almost 90 years ago. Delta 8 is federally legal. Its effects are a perfect hybrid of CBD and Delta 9, giving it a similar buzz and all the medical effects of Delta 9 without the laziness, anxiety, paranoia, or mental fogginess. Make sure that you go and use our promo code, because you're going to get 5% off if you use the promo code zero. It is unbelievable stuff. I love it. It helps you sleep. It helps you do all kinds of stuff. Well, if you're me, it does. I don't know if I could point to like the New England Journal of Medicine that helps you, but I know that I've talked to a lot of people and it's helped them. So hopefully it helps you in the same exact way. Go to 3chi.com, enter the promo code zero. You're going to get 5% off your order. Must be 21 to purchase. Check them out on Twitter and Instagram and all over the place at 3ChiCBD. You're going to like their account as well. Everybody talks good about them. Me, Robbie Fox, the fellas on Section 9 or 10, they all love it too. Make sure that you check that out, 3chi.com. Let's head up to a little bit better news than the last round. We're going to go up to Canada. We like to go up, but Kate, I have bad news.
What?
We're not going to Saskatoon.
No. Oh, if it's not Saskatoon, I don't want it.
Yeah, we're not going to Saskatoon. Oh. But we are going to your friends in Nova Scotia. Which makes you that's a close second. Mm-hmm. Because the New York Times reports that the warning showed up more than a week before in mailboxes. So in your mailbox, imagine sitting in your house in like, let's just take you, for example, Kate. You're in Astoria hanging out. Next thing you know, your crazy mail lady calls you and like, hey, they're stealing packages again. Come get your packages. There's a piece of mail that has a government seal on it that you need to come get. You open it up and you see that they are releasing gray wolves into the area, which in Astoria would be a bizarre move.
To say the least.
Like that would be, or Hoboken. Hoboken would be another bizarre place to release some gray wolves, but they're getting released. So it comes on an official government letterhead from the Department of Defense to your door. You automatically think this is real, right? Like if it comes in a sealed from the government envelope, you think it's real.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's what happened to the citizens of Nova Scotia. There was going to be a training exercise that happened in Nova Scotia, and they sent out all these letters saying that gray wolves were going to be in the area. They're just doing a little bit of goofing. They're doing a little bit of training. The letter said, if a gray wolf is encountered, do not provoke, engage, or feed the animal. Back away slowly while remaining calm. Do not turn and run. Other residents of the area in Annapolis Valley near the Bay of Fundy, as we all know, evidently heard the growling coming from the woods. So imagine getting this letter and then hearing the sounds of a gray wolf in your area.
I was just going to say, like, those wolves are enormous. Like, this is not some small little fox. I feel like reading that part right there, if I had children and I got that, one, I'd be calling my local government and going, wait, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? And two, I would probably be nervous to let my kids, like, walk to school and shit.
Yeah, a gray wolf average is like 200 pounds.
Yeah. Well, so the old interweb says the adult male gets to 180 and the adult female gets to 120. Those are large animals.
Yeah.
And they can run up to 37 miles per hour.
Yeah, that's the part that'll get you. Mm-hmm.
Yep, but there was no wolves,
in fact.
It was all a psychological training exercise gone wrong. Imagine being this. This is an idea of a fucking boot captain. This is a boot captain's idea to have this going on. He said the goal was to train a brigade of reservists on the methods of defending against a disinformation campaign by a foreign adversary. The soldiers who were organized who organized it created a campaign of their own, printed flyer warnings that the wolves had been seen in the valley. They also broadcast the sounds of growling wolves from speakers, according to the Ottawa Citizen, which reported on the incident Wednesday. Only members of the military were supposed to see the flyers and hear the broadcast, but the warning letter somehow got sent to nearby residents. Because those people in the military here are trying to tricksy trick. They also have Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. They're going to post that bitch quick, fast, in a hurry because it's their family that's at stake. I'm breaking OPSEC in a second if I think my family's going to be eaten by wolves. That's not even a question.
Yeah, if I'm in the military and I'm being tricked by this and I have a cousin with like three toddlers over in Fundy Bay, you better believe I'm giving her a call and telling her.
Yeah, you can't be goofing around in the play area at Timmy Hortons when that kind of stuff is going around. Yeah. Get them back home. Put their mask on and get them back home.
Yeah.
Because there's no mask in the play area. Mm-mm. Everybody knows that. So imagine sitting there, the growling wolves are all going on from this loudspeaker, and you're just freaking out. Soon the phone started ringing at the Department of Lands and Forestry's office in Kentville. Oh, the people in Kentville got an earful. The letter had said that the department and other government agencies had deliberately reinduced gray wolves into the forests of Nova Scotia. Quote, generally what's going on in Canada at this time is appalling. Mrs. Bryant, I don't look at the current state of Canadian politics and say, honest to God, I can't think of anything off the top of my head about Canada that's appalling.
Not a single thing.
That's not an adjective that I would use to describe Canada would be appalling. Kate?
Well, I think Miss Bryant, she studies military information operations and propaganda, and she said that move by the government to try this training thing gone wrong was appalling.
Oh, don't be on her side.
I'm on her side.
Be on her side.
For Canada, that's a harsh thing for her to say.
She went a little high into it, right? She said, they seem to have introduced a policy of weaponization of influence domestically. The wolf incident follows a July report from the Ottawa Citizen in which members of the Canadian military sought to discourage members of the public against engaging in civil disobedience during the coronavirus endemic. She said, it's a failure of governance and a failure to ensure restraint, as well as a failure to ensure ethics are built into training and planning operations.
He's 110% right. Nothing she's saying there is weird in any way.
No, but
you
the fact
need
that he
to
thinks...
be building a relationship of trust with the public. If they do this, what won't they do?
Apparently FDR's offspring live there in Canada now.
Oh, yeah, FDR.
Miss Bryant for Canadian president or whatever they have up there. Premier. He's right, though. Like, if they're doing this kind of training without thinking that this is going to – that locals aren't going to be wondering about gray wolves and hearing gray wolf roars or whatever in their neighborhoods and, like they're really not – that's scary that the leaders are not thinking shit like that through. And so what
else? Yeah,
well, a lot of times when you're talking about training and especially something like this, you think about like three steps and you never get to that fourth step, that next step where you think like, oh, it might have ramifications outside of our unit. And that's what Chap's going back to saying, like, this is a boot captain putting this training together because, yeah, he just never put it all together and thought might get shared to somebody's
family. If we need to have a military dictionary, like a military urban dictionary of good initiative, bad judgment,
yeah,
this is it. Because Mrs. Bryant, I think she can honestly, she can go up and challenge Prime Minister Justin Trudeau based on this. He's not talking about militarization of gray wolves. He's not talking about it. He's too chicken shit to do it. She's out there doing it. She's putting in the Ottawa Citizen. I like to see that. That's a little, it's feisty. I like that.
I like it too.
Mm-hmm. All right, that made me want to think. Gray wolves, if you're doing psychological deterrent, maybe in Nova Scotia, that would work a little bit well. But I think that we have some other options that we can do too. So I want to do a new little segment where we're not going to do a snake draft. There's a line in A Few Good Men that says these are the facts and they are undisputed. Kate, I want you to start off and give us one sound and one song that you would use as a psychological deterrent that would be better than the gray wolf.
Okay. Just forever.
Just on an endless loop. Okay,
endless
that's good.
Loop.
Yeah, I wanted to kill myself just then.
Yeah, I was going to see how long I could do it, but then I saw people's faces.
Love that Kate took it literally and thought we meant, hey, a sound you can make personally.
It's just high-pitched enough that it sounds like it could be some kind of alarm, but it's awful. And then I'm taking us to Lamb Chop for the song.
Damn it!
Oh.
This is the song that never ends. Yes, it goes on and on, my friends. Some people
That's
started singing
only
it.
Answer.
I don't know what it was. And they continued singing it forever just because this is a song that never ends. It goes on and on, my friends. Because it's one thing to play a song over and over that they know where the beginning is. They know where the end is.
Some people might not know that song. Kyle, let's play This Is a Song That Doesn't End by our good friend Lamb Chop, longtime Stoolie Lamb Chop. That's a good pick, Kate. I don't even think you really need to explain that one too much, but the floor is yours if you want to.
Just that there's no beginning or no end to it, so at least maybe in their minds, if you're being tortured with a regular song, you know there's certain parts to it, and so you can pass mm-hmm. the time a certain way. This just starts to blend into one awful song where you don't know where it starts or where it ends.
All right, Kyle, you're up next.
All right, so the sound is where I'm kind of hung up on. I think I'm going to go with porn sounds. Just moaning, high pitched. That's where I thought Kate was going at first, to be honest.
That is how I sound when I... Yeah, see? That's it.
Yeah, no. Okay. So, right. but I'm going to go with porn sounds just for hours.
Because then you start to get annoyed, but then you start to get a little horny. But then you start to get annoyed again, but then you're horny.
Yeah, very confusing times. Mm-hmm.
The old back and forth, yeah.
Yeah.
They call Classic. That edging in the biz.
Yeah, it's like a long-term edging, absolutely. Yeah.
Just mm-hmm. edged into Bolivian.
Yeah, and then, the Razor's Edge. Shout out Razor Ramon.
For my song, this is the most disliked thing on YouTube in the history of YouTube. Rebecca Black's Friday.
But that song's kind of a banger, though. Like, I think you could like it.
We'll see after 6 hours.
After 6 hours, it would start to make me nuts. But especially because there's parts of the song that don't even rhyme. She just kind of starts talking about her.
It doesn't make sense.
It gets annoying.
Her voice will just destroy your soul piece by piece.
Friday,
every time it plays.
Friday.
Oh, we're going to play it. Don't worry about that. So everyone will probably turn the pod off after this, but it's not a big deal.
All right, Cons, follow it. Cons, what's yours?
All right, so for my sound, I'm really I'm torn between two sounds, really. So I'll say them both, and I'll pick one. But one is just car alarms on and on. Boo, boo.
I was at a funeral, a very sad, awful funeral for a young person, and. One of the cars right next to one of the most solemn moments right next to the church started going off, and it was the most and everybody though was too afraid to look for their
key. Oh yeah, if that's your car, you just let it go until
and
forever.
So somebody let it go for like 10 minutes, and finally they had to like stop the funeral and be like, okay guys, let's all at once just dig for our keys and knock this out. Everybody shut your eyes so no one's judging. Like,
all right, bring up all your keys up here right goddamn now.
Yeah,
I'm going to see who this is.
It is, because it's the most, it's such a stressful sound, so that's a good one, fair.
Yeah, I was going to say that, or this one might be mean, but just a loudspeaker blaring incoming artillery, because that could be very scary if you just think you're going to constantly be blown up.
That's a good one.
I mean, if you're in Nova Scotia.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
so
you're
that's
not
why I
shelled.
Think, yeah, so that's why I'm going to go with car alarm, because I think car
that's
alarm's more annoying. Although the artillery would be very scary if you just randomly heard, boom. And then for song, I really think, for me at least, there are so many songs because I live with someone who thinks it's okay to play the same song 86 times in a row. And I'm probably going to get a text right now as I'm saying this. And it just, any song, you can take any song. She's taken songs that are awesome that I've loved. And I now
she
hate.
Does it with Bruce Springsteen entire album.
No, she doesn't. Just for context, I just got a text. I hate you. But I'm going to go with Escapade by Janet Jackson. And trust me, if you listen to this on repeat, it will destroy you from the inside out.
I don't know. I don't think I know that one. All right. My My sound is going to be the sound of my children's voice. I think that just in general, right now, how I'm feeling this far into quarantine, just the sound of their voice would get the job done for anybody. It would drive them nuts. I know it has for me. My song would be, and I'm going to make a little caveat here, because I'm going to have, it's going to be a loop. And the only thing, and you're going to be surprised, it's brought to you by our good friends at Queen. But it's going to be a part of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
And it will just be the part, is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? And then boom, and it repeats over and over.
It's Queen edging.
I thought you were going to say it was going to be this part. Galileo, Galileo. Just over and over.
That would be bad too. There's a lot that song is brilliant, but almost any individual part you could take it and it would be torture.
I agree.
I thought you were gonna go with I see a little silhouette of a lion,
Nope.
Yeah, you're right. Separately, well, it stinks.
Yeah, that one would kill me.
And it would ruin that song.
I didn't see us having Lamb Chop on the pod today.
That was the first song I thought of when we discussed doing this. That I think that's the clear-cut number one choice.
Yeah, that's a good one. All right, let's move on to round number four. A little monkey goofing. I love to do a little monkey goofing. Kate, what's going on with our friends? Nope, not our friends. What's going on with the Russians?
What's going on with our enemies over there? Yeah. A Russian fake news campaign aiming to undermine the Oxford University COVID-19 vaccine is claiming that it could turn people into monkeys. Yes, that's right, monkeys. The bizarre report and images were uncovered by a special investigation by The Times and claim patients can develop ape-like characteristics because the British-made vaccine uses a chimpanzee virus as a vector. Very, very likely. I'm sure that tons of people...
They just must have the dumbest people working their propaganda departments. But honestly, maybe not, because it works. Like, their propaganda legitimately works. Like, everybody here, like, we have been big time influenced by Russian propaganda.
Who's that? Jenny McCarthy? I can see her believing it. The anti-vaxxer ladies.
She definitely believes it, too.
Totally.
So does Kristen Cavallari. She believes it.
Yeah, there you go. They're believing it. One state TV channel even ran images of a suit-clad Prime Minister Boris Johnson with the hirsute features of chimp. A Whitehall source told the newspaper the propaganda was reckless and contemptible and could damage people's health. The campaign is aimed at influencing nations to purchase the Russian frozen vaccine known as Sputnik V, which has been trialed in the Burdenko Hospital in Moscow, involving both civilian and military volunteers. You know, I feel like I'm going to pick Oxford over the Burdenko Moscow.
Yeah, that sounds like it's really on the up and up. Yeah.
I like it that Russia basically thinks, you know what happened here? Russia, they just got access to the Harry Potter movies, and they think that level non-bottom like went over to the UK and started doing all kinds of potions and what have you. Next thing you know, you're an orangutan.
Yeah. And so they want people to buy their little Russian vaccines instead of these ones that seem so much more legit. The Prime Minister's official spokesman said any attempt to spread lies was utterly deplorable. They added that the UK has made its position very clear to Russia. I love that somebody in higher government had to respond to Russia from the UK and be like, yeah, our vaccine's not turning people into monkeys. Please stop. Like, I love that that was part of someone's day. Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab told the BBC that it's a shabby piece of disinformation, but very serious because it's an attempt to disrupt attempts to find a safe vaccine. Russia has a track record of using disinformation as a foreign policy tool, and especially with this vaccine in particular, especially when we're trying to come together as an international community. And yeah, so everybody's trying to work together and Russia's like just being a total dickhead as per usual.
I like that the Russians actually got somebody from England to come over and be like, yeah, I had coronavirus and they gave me the vaccine and it turned me into a monkey. And then they flash to the Monty Python scene where it's like, I got better.
I'll be honest, a little part of me, I wouldn't mind being able to crush the jungle gym.
Oh yeah, dude! Like, if you made me a non-brachiating monkey, I'd be so stoked.
Right? If I could still have my brain, but also I can like be the most popular, awesome person on the playground, and I can like climb all over the place. I don't hate it.
Monkeys definitely though one of those animals where it seems really cool to maybe be or have as a pet, but when in actuality, it's not really.
Yeah.
Oh, I think having one as a pet, depending on whenever you got one, it would be very, very brutal to do it. Like, yeah. They just want to fly around the house all the time. But being a monkey in real life would be incredible.
Here, let's say this. You get to be a human and remain appearing as yourself, but have monkey capabilities. Then I'm on board.
So basically what Kate just said?
I thought she said something else. Sorry.
I have my brain.
Oh, no, yeah.
Well, no, I have my brain, but I'd have a monkey body. That way I could, like...
That's
what
she was saying.
I could have sex in the street. I could poop wherever I wanted, but I could be me.
I mean, you could do that now. I mean, you live in New York
almost,
City.
Yeah, I was going to say, almost people do that already.
That's true. But a Russian embassy representative told the Times that the suggestion... I'm paraphrasing a little bit here, but the suggestion that Russia... that us, these perfect beings, would ever meddle in propaganda against the vaccine is disinformation. Like, we would never get out of here. Huh? That's what
she
said.
And it's obviously aimed at discrediting Russia's efforts at combating the pandemic, including the good cooperation we've established with the UK in this field.
Mm.
But see, this is where we're at with this thing, that people are so fed up and they just want it to be over that they hear, hey, we have this vaccine, might turn you into a monkey. People think like, okay, I'm okay. I'll take that risk.
I don't think so. Like, the number of people in the United States who are saying that they're not sure they would take the vaccine now is alarming. Because if you don't do it, like if you don't have a large portion of society that takes the vaccine, it's not going to work.
Well, they're saying they might not do it because they're not sure it's safe yet. And this is Rush shit, like what Rush is
doing
is part
of that. That's what I mean.
Advantage.
Like the way that we're doing, and that is really the fear of pushing it faster and going beyond normal FDA regulations and like the trials and all that shit.
You know, when they do finally have one that they're like pretty sure this is the one and that it's safe to get people to take it, there's probably going to have to be a campaign of famous people getting photographed getting it so that we feel like it's okay. We're all thinking of the same person who would be the one that we'd all feel good if we saw him get it. Who is it?
Oh, let's say it at a count of three. Ready?
One, two, three.
The Rock.
Chaps.
Oh.
Who'd you guys say? The Rock?
I said The Rock.
I said Chaps.
Oh, Chaps. Yeah, Chaps getting it. Dave getting it, maybe. I don't know.
Imagine The Rock gets it. Like, if The Rock gets it, I think you got to get it.
If I see The Rock getting any kind of shot, I would also like that shot. That's good. Yeah.
Or Stone Cold Steve Austin, if he and like when the glass breaks and there's a vaccine behind it, and he's like, "If you're gonna take the vaccine, give me a hell yeah,
hell yeah."
Someone throws it to him from the crowd, and he jabs it in his arm.
Yeah, I love it.
That would be incredible. That would absolutely be incredible. And then if you got the vaccine, you can move up to Indiana after you got out and get a fantastic job with our friends at NVETS. Because I know you need a job. You're thinking about getting out. You're DMing all of us and asking what you could do. How do you get into a job like this? Well, my friend, you got to trust people who know more about the job market than you. That's our friends at NVETS.org. You can go to their NVETS.org/0. You create a profile and learn more about the Indiana communities. Browse the current job openings. It's going to take you a while. And don't say you're going to browse them all, because my friends, there's 80,000 of those fuckers floating around. If you need a job, Indiana's the place to be. They have the light that shines brightest in Indiana. If it wasn't that case, Pat McAfee probably wouldn't live there. Housing costs are among the lowest in the nation. It is legitimately incredible. We looked at it because if I moved to another city for Barstool, it would probably be Chicago. And there's so many opportunities in my wife's field. She does science stuff where they turn vaccines that don't turn people into monkeys. They research all that kind of stuff. One of the spots in Indiana that we looked at, there's not very many places that compete with Texas as far as size of the house and what you get. Indiana beats them.
And like, Indianapolis is awesome. Fuck Chicago. I'm all the way in on Indianapolis. It's become one of my favorite cities, hands down. Also, you could eat off the Indianapolis airport floor. It's so clean. And they have the
best. You said that straight up after like a hangover wedding, like that you're like, I feel so sick, but this airport's unbelievable.
Oh yeah. I've been out. Yeah. Indiana even makes my hangovers feel better. That's how good it is. So
yeah, Indiana is awesome. Go to NVETS.org. They're going to get the softest t-shirt in the game. If you can get a soft t-shirt and you don't do it just for signing up for a spot, you're a fucking idiot. Why are you even listening to this show for? Like, if you can get a free shirt just by putting your little dick skinners on a computer or a phone and typing in a couple things and putting in a field so they can find jobs that fit you, and you don't want to do that because you're too good for it, fuck you. How about that? All right, let's move on. What round are we on for?
Round Jesus number five.
All right, this is my good friend Jake Woods came on the show. I had no idea Jake was this handsome. He undersells himself and his Avi. Like, it's a little bit too far away. If I look like this dude, my face would be front and center on my Avi at all times. He's very attractive, very well-spoken. Not only that, but he's doing fantastic things for people around the globe. Like, what this has turned in, just from a couple buddies who got together who still wanted to help folks whenever they got out of the military, turned into one of the largest military organizations that's veteran backed that's really ever been, like, for real, like ever been. And I told him this in the interview, but I wanted to see how you guys feel. There's been organizations that we have backed on Zero Block 30 or that we really cared about at the beginning, and some of them have grown to the point where you almost lose sight of what your initial focus was. And I think that that's a very dangerous thing that happens to a lot of nonprofits. They get bigger and bigger and bigger. Next thing you know, it's all about fundraising. It's all about getting bigger, better CEOs and just increasing the bottom line. While Team Rubicon has grown a shit ton, they have maintained their focus on we're here to help people. And I think that's incredible.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. All right, here's Jake. Get on right now. Now in Zero Block 30, I'm privileged to have somebody that we've talked about a lot on the show, because I think that one of the biggest questions that we get asked is, hey, I'm looking to donate to a veteran-run organization. Who should we go to? And one of the answers that we always say is Team Rubicon. So we actually have the CEO, the guy who started it. We have Jake Wood on the show. Jake, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jeffs.
So when you got out, well, first of all, let's start back before that. Your career arc is really interesting because I always find people, especially athletes who join the Marine Corps after college, after they've graduated and don't commission, they just enlist. I'm always like, what in the fuck are you doing? What was your thought process on going enlisted versus commissioning?
Yeah, good question. There were a couple things, right? And it kind of ties back into also a question about why the Marine Corps, which I often get asked. And, mm-hmm. As I played my last game was January 1st, 2005. It was my senior year. I was graduating that spring. I'd already committed to myself that I was going to join the military. And I started looking at my options. And of course, my first natural instinct was, I should maybe go be an officer because I just spent 4 years getting this stupid degree. Mm-hmm. And so a couple things happened. One, I spoke to an OSO, an officer selection officer out of Milwaukee, and was a captain. And I met him on campus. And again, bear in mind that I just got done playing my last football. That was six. And then, he walks up and the first thing he asked me is, how many pull-ups can you do? And, I don't know, 290 pounds, I could probably bang out like six or seven pull-ups.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, well, that's not good enough. He said, the next question was, how fast can you run 3 miles? I said, dude, I haven't run a single mile in 4 years. I can tell you what my 40 yard dash time is. And so then I could tell he was losing interest, but then he asked, have you had any injuries? And man, the joke is I was made of glass. So I had, a bunch of foot injuries, a bunch of foot surgeries, and I had my shoulder reconstructed. And he just looked at me. He laughed. He said, man, you're a lot of paperwork. I'm not sure I really want to put in the time, because in 2005, man, people were lining up out the door to join. Yeah. And so he didn't have any problems making his numbers. So,
and that must've been the first time that you heard that, because it wasn't like you went to some tiny little school. You went to the University of Wisconsin. You were a smart guy, twice on the all academic team. So it's not like you didn't have options. That must've been the first time in your life. Like, we're not sure if you're athletic enough.
Well, I mean, my football career already demonstrated to me that I wasn't athletic enough, but, I was obviously frustrated. I'm sitting here, I'm trying to serve my country, and the guy's basically just telling me all the reasons why I can't do it, or why he can't do it rather. So, but then I had another conversation, because I was convinced that I was going to prove him wrong. But then I started talking to some folks who were in and who had come back, and they said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, gee, you know, I want to lead Marines in combat, you know, like mm-hmm. the type of stupid answer that a 22-year-old kid who's never been to war gives. But they said, okay, well, don't be an officer, go be a squad leader, if that's what you want to do. And they kind of explained to me how the war at that point in time was really a squad war.
Yeah.
And that made a lot of sense to me. So I ended up enlisting. You know, I considered joining the Army. I went in, I spoke to a recruiter there. I was kind of exploring the Ranger contracts and the 18 X-ray contracts that they had, but for all the same reasons of, you know, my surgeries, they wouldn't give me any of those. And so then, you know, when the Army recruiter says, hey, you can join, but you got to join big Army. I said, hell no, I'm going, yeah. I'm going to join the Marine Corps. Thanks, but no thanks. And best decision I ever made.
And you did it. You did two tours. You ended up going to Iraq and in Afghanistan and getting out. And I think that's where like your notoriety really started. How did you come across the idea of even doing Team Rubicon? And did you ever envision that it would be where it is right now?
I mean, to answer your second question is an easy no. We never imagined that it would become what it has. To your first question, you know, there was never any idea on it. It was more born out of our decision to go to Haiti in 2010. But that wasn't, you know, we didn't do that with the intent of starting an organization. We just did that with the intent of, you know, going down and helping some people. I will say that right when I was getting out of the military, it was at the height of the pirate craze, right? You remember when all those pirates off the Horn of Africa were capturing all those ships, you know, Captain Phillips, all that stuff. And snipers were in high demand. So all of these security companies were snapping up school-trained snipers like me to run these security contracts. And they were making good money, just like any of the contractors were back in the day. Paid $1,000 a day to go protect these ships. And I was thinking about doing that. And it just didn't, you know, I was thinking to myself, man, if I'm going to carry a gun, like I want to do it for my country or I don't really want to do it at all. But it prompted me to think, and I thought about what the options were. I said, you know, what would be cool is if I could take the skills that I developed to go protect NGOs on the ground somewhere in a bad place. And so I started having like conceptual idea of, you know, what would a Blackwater for charities, development organizations look like. But I didn't pursue that. So then when the Haiti earthquake happened, we just, you know, on an impulse, we went down there and that was how the idea for TR was born.
And I think it's interesting because you guys, I would imagine running a big nonprofit like you have with Team Rubicon, it's difficult because you have certain things about smaller veteran-run organizations that are charitable. It's easier to keep eyes on everything that happens every day and to make sure that the reason why you started it stays what you're continuing to do. Have you found as it's grown that it's more and more difficult to stay focused on what the focus is supposed to be?
Focus is something that we really emphasized early. When we had some initial success with the organization, we had a lot of people, particularly people with money, you know, foundations or corporations or individuals that wanted to contribute who tried to influence what direction the organization would go. You know, they'd say, oh, you guys are really good at disaster response. You guys should work on the homelessness problem. You know, we'll give you $500,000 to do it, or, you know, name whatever issue. And so we developed a pretty good discipline early at saying no, even when that meant we were turning away a lot of money. We knew we wanted to be a disaster response organization. We believed that that's what we could be best in the world at. And so we've had that focus, that rigor throughout. But, you know, as the organization scaled, of course, I mean, I you know, there are days I walk into meetings and I'm, you know, I'll hear that, you know, hey, we've got this project that we're working on, you know, whatever it might be in our tech team or in our marketing team. And I'll be like, we're working on that shit? Are you kidding me? That's amazing. Yeah. You know, and I'll be like, wow, we're doing that. I didn't even know about it. That's unbelievable. And, so that's fun. It initially, when that first started to happen, it was disconcerting. You know, I felt like I was losing control because I was losing control, right? But it was in a good way. And now I just embrace it. And there's nothing more I love than showing up to a meeting and learning that we're about to launch some new program, some new tech tool, whatever it might be that I've never heard of before.
Right.
To me, that's like a sign of success.
And I think that's what's interesting about the, from you coming from an enlisted perspective, now you're out there speaking and doing engagements, becoming a keynote speaker, writing a book on leadership. And a lot of times I imagine the people that are, we're in like a platoon room with you, they're like, that Jake, come on, man. Like that guy's out there doing it. It's just, and I the same way for me, whenever I think about what my Marines must think of my job now, I had one that reached out to me and was like, I had no idea that you were funny at all. Like you were just, have you had that experience too? Like that Jake is doing this stuff.
You know, I haven't heard too much of that. I mean, I don't know that anybody expected me to do exactly what we've been doing here, but you know, I would hope that nobody looks back on me in any of my platoons and thought I was a shitbag. I always took a lot of pride in, yeah, you know, getting my job done and being proficient at my job. So hopefully I haven't caught anybody off guard with that. I mean, maybe I have an overinflated sense of what kind of Marine I was. But
no,
I
think we all do. I think that's the commonality between every Marine.
Guys
constantly after they get out, I'm like, dude, you were fucking garbage. Like you didn't pass the PFT the entire time I had you. You're trash. And now like your entire profile on social media is how you were like this last action hero. And speaking of, like you constantly with Team Rubicon, when it's talked about in the media, because you guys get covered by like MSNBC, Fox News, CNN. You're one of the only groups who's spoken of highly on all three of those networks. They post these sizzle reels of you guys going to Haiti or going to New Orleans. Looking back, is there an opportunity that you missed and you wish that you would have done differently?
With regard to media?
With regards to just Team Rubicon as a whole.
Oh man. I mean, I look back on the last 11 years of this organization. I've made, you know, as a CEO, I've made hundreds of tactical and strategic errors. And, you know, I think I can say that safely because we've made at least one more good strategic decision than we did bad ones so far. But, you know, I think the ledger is probably pretty close to even. I mean, I think about some of the human capital planning, strategies that we made early, you know, where did we invest in our hiring early? I'll give you an example. One of the things I often say at Team Rubicon is there's 100 things more important to us than money, but they all cost money, right? The reality of running a charity is you have to raise money in order to do your work. It's a business. And, you know, for the first 4 or 5 years of the organization, we did not hire a single fundraising professional on the staff. We, you know, we like to joke that we got by with bullshit and charisma. And, you know, that meant that I was the chief fundraiser for the organization. Now, I'm a pretty good, you know, salesman. You get me in a room with somebody, I can draw a connection. I can make a good pitch, but I'm not a strategic fundraiser. But we justified this because we were still growing year over year. I mean, every year we were raising $1 million more than the year before. And we kind of thought, oh, great, we're really good at this. My God, we were awful fundraisers despite our success. We were raising money despite ourselves. And so I think back to like, if I had made the right hire in year two, would we be a $100 million organization right now instead of a $50 million organization? Probably. And so, you know, I'm comfortable saying that because, hey, we've still scaled. And I've learned over, you know, since we've had great professional fundraisers on staff over the last 6 years, like I've learned a ton from them. But man, if I'd had them 3 years earlier, it'd be a profound difference. And that's just one example. I mean,
yeah, I mean, I think that's a great example of knowing that even though you look at success, I think that that's what drives successful people. Like there's certain things that we've done on this show or that I did in my career that I know that if I did it a little bit different, it would have been a little bit better. Do you have somebody like you did as like an A-team leader now that's your right-hand person that you bounce things off of that if you guys are going to make a wrong move, they're like, Jake, this is the wrong move. Let's chill out here. Let's pull back the reins.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I would emphasize that from the beginning, as a first-time entrepreneur with really no real-world experience at all, one of the things I think was surround myself with really great, competent professionals. It just happens that one of those was not a fundraiser, right? But you know, I knew a lot of things that I didn't know. I knew I needed an accountant, a CFO, a chief operating officer. I knew I needed someone to design and run our programs. So when I look at our executive team today, you know, I see a group of people who are my equal or superior in every way. And ours is definitely a culture where we have an expectation that people take contrarian viewpoints and that we have really healthy debates. So I get told I'm wrong all the time. I mean, we're all going to be opinionated and we have great dialogue about what the right way forward is. At the end of the day, I make the decision, and that decision's made with the input of some fantastic people. You know, I think about, you know, the all how lucky I am to have been able to learn from these folks along the way. And frankly, I, you know, half the time I look around the room and I'm like, how the fuck are these people even like willing to follow me as CEO? Like, what's wrong that they're signing up to work with me? But, yeah.
And I'm sure you got this question a lot as time went on, like after leaving the Marine Corps, your collegiate experience and playing football, then on to two different tours of service, starting a very successful nonprofit organization. When are you going to write the book? What took it for you to sit down and actually write Once a Warrior?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I've always enjoyed writing. And when I first got back from Iraq and Afghanistan, I wrote, you know, vignettes, if you will, of my experiences over there. My battalion was deployed to Iraq in Anbar Province during the bloodiest year of that war in 2007. And then my battalion was literally thrown to the wolves in 2008 in the Southern Helmand Valley.
Where were you at in Fallujah?
I was right outside Fallujah in the Zaidan running Dwell Ops.
I got shot in Karma. That's where I was at too. Same time.
Well, hey, I'm glad you're still here, buddy. Yeah, we had guys up in Karma too. You know, I think it was our Echo company was up in Karma. And then in 2008, we were deployed to Afghanistan, and not as a MAGTAF. So any Marines out there will know, you know, we didn't deploy as a Marine Air Ground Task Force, which meant that we had, you know, 1,000 Marine battalion deployed to an area the size of Vermont with no air support, no tanks, no artillery.
Sounds like a good time.
No, we got our asses kicked every day. Yeah. We got our noses bloodied and it was tough. And I, you know, in that second tour, I was working as a sniper and that was, you know, had its own just differences, right? And how that war unfolds for you. And so when I got back, I started writing. I just, both to memorialize those moments, but also just as a way to process them and think about them. Because when you write, you really have to, you have to capture not just what happened, but how you felt, how you reacted. And frankly, like it gave me this space and time to do that. So to answer your question, you know, the first half of the book where it talks about my time in the military, a lot of those stories were written first 10 years ago. Of course, I had to go back through and I, you know, heavily edited them. And it was amazing to actually go back and read how I felt 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I would read some of these stories and how they unfolded. And I think, oh my God, I've changed how I, not just how I remember this, but how I feel about it today is so much different than how I felt then.
Yep. We talked about that same thing.
You know, I tried to maintain some. Yeah. Oh, I love Nate's such a great guy.
Yeah. He is.
In his book, One Bullet Away, I read my senior year before I joined and was really formative for me and my approach to my time in service. So it's been a joy to be able to get to know Nate. Cause to me, he was so, I lionized mm-hmm. him when I was joining. But I, you know, we were approaching our 10 year mark here with Team Rubicon and I felt like it was the right time. I felt like I knew what Team Rubicon was. I felt like I knew what it meant to people. And frankly, I also felt like the stories that I could tell would serve to be both inspiring, but also unifying. And the beauty about Team Rubicon is we literally bring people from all walks of life together to go serve communities they've never been to. And we're living in a time when, you know, we are more tribal than ever. We are in our camps. We hate the people on the other side and it's pathetic. And it's not, you know, it's not the country that we like to think that we went off to foreign lands to defend. And that's sad. So, you know, to the extent that the book can serve as, you know, what's the potential for America in the future? Like, I hope it can accomplish that.
And is that something that you have on the horizon? Because I've noticed just over the past couple weeks, couple months, there has been an uptick in normally what you guys had been really apolitical. There's been more like almost involvement there. Is that strategic for you to have your voice out in a bigger area with what's going on in the world now?
Are you talking about me personally or?
Yeah, you personally. Like I've noticed that you'll retweet Romney whenever he's criticizing someone and you're a little bit more outspoken at least in my perception, than in the past.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And I try to toe that line very carefully. You know, I run an organization that represents 130,000 people, and in their
division, good God, that's how many that's how many employees?
Yeah. Well, that's how many volunteers we have.
Oh, yeah.
We've got about 200 employees, 200 employees, about 130,000 volunteers registered. And so they're diverse. I mean, they come from every corner of America. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, there's people in, you know, wearing Trump hats, people wearing Biden hats, like, and everything in between. And I don't want to ever, you know, warrant that I represent their views, because I don't. I have my own. That said, you know, I look at the political day, and whereas I would have just had to swallow it and stay silent in years past, I feel like I have to say something. And I'll never come out, or I try never to come out and directly criticize, you know, specific political figures. And I could do that easily on both sides. I do think that there are specific issues that we need to, you know, step up and speak about. Whether it's social justice, whether it's wearing a fucking mask, you know, listen, like, we come from a community where one of the analogies people often use is like sheepdogs, right? And people,
right.
You'll always hear that bro vet. He's like, there's three types of people in this world: wolves, sheep, and sheepdog. I stand that line. I protect the sheep from those bad wolves out there.
Shut up, dude. You're wearing a fucking t-shirt.
Yeah. Well, you tell that same guy, like, hey, the scientific consensus is that you can protect people by wearing a mask. He's like, no, Moulin Labe, no way. Don't infringe upon my freedom. It's like, bro, you really, you know, come on, you're politicizing something that does not deserve to be politicized. And so, yes, I have felt more inclined recently to speak up on issues that I think should not be political, but have been politicized.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. There's a lot of things that are just should be common sense. If the consensus of science says wear a mask, just wear a mask. It doesn't make you manly. Like, you're not tougher than the fucking virus. Like, if it protects Nana down the street, then just do it, man.
Exactly.
Like, especially in the veteran community. Like, you wore PPE all the time. Even when you knew for a fact that there wasn't a whole lot going on in the area, you were still putting on your flat Kevlar. All we're asking now is just a little paper mask. That's easy.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
So where can people find your book at?
Yeah, well, it's sold anywhere you can buy books. So, I mean, whether it's Amazon, if you don't want to support Jeff Bezos, go to bookshop.org or IndieBound and buy it from an independent retailer.
You know, that's been such a common answer for us lately, is like, stop giving Bezos money. That dude's rich enough.
And I'm the worst, man. I swear to God, every day I walk out, I open my door, I see like 10 Amazon packages on there. And like, I'll pay for convenience, man. But yeah, exactly. We're like a joke on our street. You know, the Amazon Prime van pulls up to our house like 10 times a day. But yeah, I get it. I mean, if you want to support small retailers, go to IndieBound and do that.
Support Team Rubicon as a whole, how do they do that?
Well, listen, I imagine your military, you know, we've got 130,000. We've deployed well over 10,000 fumes. And so we need people, but we need money too. You know, we're a charity. I said earlier, dozen things more important to us than money, but they all cost money. So I know people are living in hard times right now. A lot of people out there have lost their jobs. A lot of people have a lot of economic uncertainty. If you got any money you can spare, I promise you we'll go farther with your dollar than any organization out there. We'd love to have your support.
There you go. Jake, thanks so much for joining us, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. It was fun.
I like the coincidence of Jake releasing his book, which I'm sure is going to be fantastic. But you know that him being a Marine and the publisher just coming to him and be like, all right, we're going to release your book on November 10th. There's either the boot part of him that's like, hell yeah, release it on the Marine Corps birthday. Or there's like the salt dog version of him that's like, fuck. Ah, come on, man. This is going to look so goddamn cheesy. Which one do you think it is? You think he's like super stoked, or he's like, this is cheesy?
Cheesy. I'd be torn on that too.
He's stoked. He said it in the interview. You guys didn't listen to it yet. He's stoked about it. He's still a closet motivator. All right, let's move into a little bit of save rounds and alibis. Kyle, we'll start with you.
I just want to say thoughts and prayers to all the Atlanta Braves fans who had their hearts ripped out.
People aren't talking about that enough. Both of my teams lost in game 7 of their pennant race.
Yeah, real harsh for Chaps. I know you're really pulling for your Astros and your Braves.
I know.
But it was hard to watch the Braves go down like that. And I know we have a few followers who are pretty big Braves fans, so you know, fuck you, one. But two, I'm sorry that your season ended so embarrassingly.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Not the Astros, got? Though. Fuck the Astros.
Yeah.
The only big thing for me this weekend was that I went to one of my friends had an outdoor. It was windy. We were all spaced out, but I was nervous. I was like, fuck, there's going to be bees everywhere. And I was real nervous about it. I'm hungry all the time. How am I going to eat with bees at an outdoor thing? And thank God there was enough of a wind. There wasn't too many bees. So that's my big takeaway from the weekend.
Are you pregnant enough now where your friends feel bad when they drink around you?
No.
Okay.
No, they had zero like problem doing that. So
that's good.
Yeah.
Paid you back for not texting them back, honestly.
Honestly, it was a good payback. And yeah, I got the first swag for the little fellow. They had some dinosaur clothes for him. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, very exciting.
And you were a big dinosaur lady as a kid, too.
I said whether this was a boy or a girl, the room theme was right away, it was dinosaur, so I'm pumped. Yeah,
I don't think you can go wrong there.
No,
is that it?
That's literally it. No bees. Good weekend.
Cons?
So, Army beat UTSA 28-16, and we did it rotating our fifth and sixth string quarterbacks.
Ooh.
So, that should be mentioned.
Do Army quarterbacks really matter that much, though? They throw like 100%. Two passes a game.
Yeah, Kyle, but they run the ball. The offense runs through them. So, yes, it does matter.
What is UTS? What does UTSA stand for? Ugly, terrible, stupid assholes?
That's not nice.
Am I right, Con?
Jeez, Kate.
Well, you can't spell nutsack without UTSA.
Here is the question for you. Yesterday, Alex was going to the supermarket. She says to me, hey, do you want anything? I'm going to get stuff to make French onion soup, which was delicious, by the way. And I said, yeah, actually, can you just snag me a Gatorade? I didn't specify color, though. If I said to you, each one of you, can you snag me a Gatorade, what color are you coming back with?
Yellow.
I'm not bringing you a Gatorade.
That's not nice.
Orange.
I would say yellow.
Yellow.
Yeah, yellow or orange.
Okay, she brought orange, and I just thought that was just so disrespectful.
Yeah, Kyle, orange is a wild move.
Orange is Michael Jordan's favorite.
Yeah. Orange is the best flavor of Gatorade.
I just think yellow is the most neutral of all the Gatorade colors, so you go yellow.
But the best Gatorade is either purple or blue.
That's correct. That's
now, shame
correct.
On you for not giving your intent on what you expected.
Yeah,
so,
you know.
Commander's wow. Intent. Where's that at?
Yeah, where's
true.
That?
All right. My bad, guys.
But sometimes it's a good NCO will predict Commander's intent.
Boom. So maybe I got to train her a little better.
Maybe they brought you the orange because they know you hate it.
Kate's
that's also probably true.
Go bananas. I don't really have anything either. I'm excited. I finally got my shop done, and I am super stoked about ArborTech. They are awesome. Make sure that you check out their stuff. They're great folks doing a great thing, and it's not cheap quality stuff, which is incredible.
I've got one. So it hasn't been released yet, but does everybody know what Chaps has put in his backyard? It's in the most recent video that's coming out today, Monday.
No.
So by the time you hear this, it'll be up.
What?
No one? Oh, no.
A
do you want to tell
jacuzzi.
Me you want to save it?
Oh, the hot tub?
Yeah.
It's like you're just like going down the checklist of white trash. And what else can I put out there?
This thing is awesome. I don't care what anybody says. It's unbelievable. I thought the same thing when Annalise was like, let's get this hot tub. I was like, it's a blow-up hot tub. If you touch it, it doesn't even feel like a blow-up hot tub. It's super firm, and it has stayed at 104 degrees for the last week and a half. I get in that bad boy. The bubbles are so strong that it picks my ass up out of the water, and I feel like I'm just like hanging out. Like, it is unbelievable sitting in there.
You know, my birth plan is to come down there and do it in that jacuzzi. So get it ready. Keep it clean.
That's not surprising.
All right.
Yeah.
That's not trashy at all.
And then whenever you're done, you can pull a little bit of Hillary Duff, and I'll barbecue the placenta on my big grunette.
Oh, my God.
I almost just threw up my mouth.
Okay.
Iron. John the Retreat.